You're listening to the Buckeye Visualist Podcast Show.
I am coming to you from the Fawcett Center at the Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio. You are listening to the Buckeye Visualist Podcast, and this is my second annual ONPA convention episode. It is April 13th, and would you believe that we are right next door to the Ohio Stadium where the Buckeyes are playing their annual spring game as we speak? So Buckeye Nation is thriving on campus today. I am your host, Lori King, and I'm going to share the mic with not only our keynote speaker and light guru, Terry Clark, who will enlighten us about his 50 photographs, 50 years project, but with other convention attendees as well. First up is going to be Terry, a longtime photojournalist who's worked at newspapers in Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Michigan, basically the Midwest grid, and you currently live in Pittsburgh now.
Right.
He also teaches, coaches, and consults, so prepare to learn a thing or two about photography and light. Welcome to the show, Terry.
Thank you.
I am also with Jeremy Wadsworth. He is our large market photojournalist of the year for the ONPA 2023 competition. He is the chief photographer at the Toledo Blade newspaper. And I also have with me Andrew Dolph. He is the president of the ONPA and a staff photographer with the Times Reporter out of New Philadelphia, and he is the photographer of the year for the small market. Congratulations, guys.
Thank you.
So we're just going to have a conversation. Terry, I'm going to start with you. So you presented your 50 photos today, and they were wonderful.
Thank you.
Of course, they started out black and white.
Yes.
Because, you know, you've been around a while.
Yes. Hence the 50-year retro.
There were a couple color photos in there.
Yes, a few.
The very first one you took when you were 15.
Yes.
1973.
Yes, it was a great year.
That was the photo that charted your course.
Yes,
for your career.
I did not show that one because actually I do not have that one anymore. And it's probably a good thing because it was so basic. Used a 4x5 graphic camera with a roll of film back. So I got 8 exposures on the roll of film because they were 2.25 by 3.25. Same proportion as a 35mm, just much, much larger. And Chuck showed me how to use the camera, lock it at 15 feet, wait for them to come by and click the button. And it was the era of the giant flash gun and my antique camera, which that time was still an antique camera. No news photographer was using 4x5 at that time, I'm sure. So I probably am the youngest photographer to ever use that on an assignment. I don't know. But yeah, I got lucky twice because I knew the plays and I waited for them. And they liked two of the pictures. So I sold one for $5, which is about the same price as what I'd sell them today.
So go ahead and take us back. Give us a snapshot of some of the photos that you had in your show today.
One of the first photos, of course, was of my mentor, Chuck Elliott, and that was a portrait I did of him while we were both photographing the Elma Highland Games. That was the annual Scottish festival, the largest festival in North America. And he took me to that the year that I started, and we shot pictures of all these kilted lassies and men and drums and bagpipes, and I love bagpipe music. It's kind of Scottish roots, so that was nice. And Chuck showed me how to cover something like that. And so I took a picture of him in his sporty hat from the 1970s. So showed him a little bit of background, told a little bit of background about him. And first one I showed you, I remember now, was the tower coming down. And that was one, you know, when I was 15. And after I pestered Chuck long enough, he let me hang out at the newspaper and would occasionally throw me a bone, said, here, go take a picture. And that day he handed me his Leica M3 and a 21mm lens, and he said, there you go, kid, go see the world, but don't drop it. He wanted to make sure I brought the camera back intact. So, and I did, and I happened to run across this demolition crew throwing bricks from the top of this tower, so that's what I photographed. It was a smokestack, and, you know, I didn't get hit, let the camera get hit, and came back, and the picture was on the page 1 of the newspaper the next day, and I was thrilled.
Now, that was in your hometown.
That was in my hometown.
Which was where?
Alma, Michigan, smack dab in the center of the state, so Lower Peninsula.
Another photo that you showed was a traffic accident.
Oh, shit.
It said, oh, shit, on the back of
one of the vehicles.
Yep,
and I saw that, and I went, oh, that's too funny. I had to photograph it. And brought it back, and the first question Chuck asked, of course, was, did you wipe that window? And I said, no, I didn't. You taught me never to be the news, record the news. So after showing it to the editor, Chuck was the managing editor, but after showing it to the editor, and he laughed, he said, go ahead and run it. So they did, and it did not get the kind of response that anybody expected. Nobody cared. They were so afraid that having curse words on the front page of the newspaper would cause a real stir in a small town. Nobody cared. They thought it was funny, so yay.
Guys, did any of the photos in that slideshow appeal to you? Which ones appeal to you?
Well, the one that stands out in my mind right away is the one from with the Miss Nude competition with the ceramic leg and the guy juxtaposed in the front. I mean, that just stands out in my mind from the whole show. But I mean, there was a lot of really nice images in there.
That one in particular, I felt like you were channeling Elliot Erwitt.
Thank you. Yes.
His handbook still is prominent on my shelf.
Mm-hmm.
But that picture in particular really resounded with me. And then probably my favorite, especially after today, was the portrait of the scientist or the math teacher?
From
the profile and in the background, chemistry teacher.
Chemistry professor, yes.
With the chemistry drawings on the blackboard. Boy, that's got to be my favorite.
Thank you.
And it was such a simple picture. But you said it was, you know, one of the audience members was talking about how it looked like it was shot with a zoom, but he was only 3 feet away, you said, from the board.
It was shot with a 50-millimeter lens. I was literally walking around the hallways of the college that I was photographing for, and you know, I kept my head on a swivel, as we do as news photographers. We're always looking back and forth. And I went past him, and I saw it in my peripheral vision, and I literally stopped in my tracks and took a step back and just said, hi, don't move.
That lens, though, and there's a reason why it will forever be dubbed as the Nifty 50.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't matter what system you're on. It has that effect. You're not using a zoom. If you have the correct subject-to-distance ratio,
exactly,
it lends itself to just this magic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what the subject matter is. It just it does it.
And that's why when I walk around, like I do a lot on campuses, well, at least I used to, I carried three cameras. It was a 35, a 50, and then usually, because we all use them, a zoom lens. And most of the images I would create or I'd find were with the 35 and the 50, because those were two of the lenses that I've grown up with.
Mm-hmm.
Because one, they were perfect. I mean, I saw in those frames, and two, let's face it, they were probably the least expensive lenses of any system. Even though I shot Leicas, they were still cheaper than some of the other ones. Mm-hmm. You could get a good 50 for about $1,000.
So we all get into photojournalism in different ways.
Yeah.
So you told a story about how you were playing football.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then you got injured.
Yeah, I got injured at 15.
And then that's what you picked up your dad's camera.
Yep.
So tell us that story, how you actually broke into photojournalism.
Well, I broke into photojournalism by getting hurt on a football field and saying, ow, that hurt. I don't want to do that again. But I wanted to hang around with the sports team and the cheerleaders, because athletes always get the girls. Especially we're in high school, you know? It's like, it's raging hormone time, I wanted to be around the team. And so I brought my dad's camera back with his blessing, and I followed the instructions on the Kodak slip that used to come in the film. It's like, okay, at 4.5, which is a maximum after that, you're shooting at 1/60 of a second. Oh, okay, what do I know about stopping action at that point? I That was the first roll of film I ever put through a camera. And I'm shooting away and I'm panning with it. I didn't even know that was a thing. I was just following the action, took the pictures. And a couple of the pictures turned out artistic. Not journalistic, but artistic. But the athletic director of the school was also the journalism teacher, so I had a class with him, showed him the pictures, and he said, you got to go down to the local newspaper. So I walked in, and part I didn't tell you is I walked in, and it's on a ledge, and I'm looking off over this newsroom, and there's the AP and UPI wire going clack, 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 clack. There was this yellow tape coming out of this machine, which was the AP tape, and there was a smell of printer's ink from the presses right over there, burnt coffee and stale cigarettes, and I'm standing there going, I'm home. I just, the entire senses were just boiling over with, this is what I want to do. And then, of course, my euphoria was broken by some gruff old guy going, what do you need? What can I do for you? And it was Chuck. And I went and I stammered like a typical 15-year-old. And he's looking at him, and he threw them back on the desk and said, this ain't no weekly, boy. This is last week's news. So then he kicked this camera case off and under the desk, and he said, if you can open it and load it, you can use it. And it just opened like my dad's camera. It was an old 4x5 camera. My dad had a camera he picked up from the PX as he left Korea, and it was a folding camera, so it basically opened up the same way, used the same kind of film. I loaded it, and he just looked at me and went, damn, now I gotta teach you how to use it. And he taught me, and I made my first pictures, and...
And that's the one you took when you were 15.
That's the
one I took. In 1973.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, that was the
one. To your dad's dismay.
Yeah, he thought that photography was a rich man's hobby and I could never make a living doing it, so I needed to learn to trade. My dad worked in the auto plant in Lansing, Michigan, and he thought I should just follow him down the path of putting door handles on cars or whatever the UAW did. And I said, no, I'm going to travel the world and take pictures. And that was just unheard of. And Chuck even met with him and said, now, this kid's got talent, so I'll help him as much as I can. And Chuck had just retired as Master Chief in charge of the Combat Camera Group down in Norfolk. So he had 20-some years of experience in the Navy training young sailors to be professional photographers. So once he took me under his wing, that was it. I was done.
And here you are today.
Here I am today, thanks to that one man.
So you were our keynote speaker today, mm-hmm. and you also gave us a workshop on lighting, and you brought in your Godox lighting kit, and mm-hmm. that is your go-to lighting kit.
Yes, it is. The only other thing I usually carry is a 400-watt second unit, but that's only when I know that I'm going to be needing it to make a huge group shot or... that it's something I need power for, like overpowering the sun.
Well, thank you for bringing that in, and we learned a lot.
Oh, sure.
Thank you. So, Andrew, you were awarded a plaque today. What plaques were you awarded today?
Small Market Photographer of the Year,
like
Best
place,
in Show,
first place,
feature, first place sports feature. Is that five?
I lost count.
I might be missing
one. Yeah. There's so many of them.
A few.
Yeah, so you had a box full, so congratulations.
Thank you.
So the same question I asked Terry is, how did you break into photojournalism?
It's a three-part answer, and I'll make it quick. My grandfather was the consummate family documentarian. I learned probably from about, I don't know, 3 or 4 years old on. He always had a camera. It was a Pentax K1000, to my best recollection. If you go further back in time, obviously he's using much older cameras. At any rate, that was the beginning of it. Fast forward to high school, I was on yearbook staff for all 4 years, so I was always taking pictures. I always had my own Pentax on me. And then I worked for the school newspaper for 2 or 3 years in high school. I made one picture in my sophomore or junior year of a fire that burned down the gymnasium. And this is San Jose, California, so I was very much in the Knight Ridder territory. The San Jose Mercury News was my paper, and it was a solid, like, 2 inches thick. Sue Morrow worked there from NPPA. That fire picture, I remember it distinctly. There were three or four kids. This was Tri-X days. It was at night, so I was really pushing the Tri-X. I didn't live too far. I think I was about a mile from the high school. I made it there. I think I rode my bike at night because I had heard about it. I think a friend called me. Went over there and got a picture of three or four kids with their backs turned all in a straight line with the fire in front of them. And it was just this huge blaze. In front of the gym was the outdoor swimming pool. So there was this really amazing reflection. From that point on, I just kept making pictures and making pictures and making pictures. And then I was afforded the opportunity to participate in a very special collaboration between the Knight Foundation, the Mercury News, and our high school paper to be on the staff of a quote-unquote newspaper, and it was called The Mosaic. It was a summertime program for aspiring journalists, and I was given the lead story, and it was about this kid that lived over the hill in Santa Cruz, and he was suffering from non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. His treatment allowed him the ability to smoke marijuana on campus, on his own high school campus, and this was 1998. That was revolutionary for the time in America. Not so much, I would say, nationwide, but not so much in California because of its progressive nature. And being in Santa Cruz, kind of like one of the party capitals of California. So I went over there and met with him and made some pictures and then took him to a spot in his house that I really liked the light. It wasn't too different from some of the window light we've had in this workshop. And he sat down and kind of contemplated his position in life. And I probably made about 15 or 20 frames. And I came back and developed them. And the photojournalists on staff at the time at the San Francisco Chronicle, who were help running and mentoring us, made the decision to run at A1. And that was pretty much it. From that point on, let's see, I left California right after graduating high school. I think I was about 19, and took a while to kind of get my footing in life. Didn't end up going to college until I was about 24 or 25. Lived in a lot of different places across the country. Still making pictures all along the way. Working various jobs in photo finishing labs. I sat on a Fuji Mini Lab machine for a year straight. I learned C41, dip and dunk development. Learned how to print properly, pretty much all of it. Most of that was in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois. I'd moved in with a woman that I fancied after. It didn't work out too well. And after just messing around for far too long, I decided, okay, it's time to go to college. Ended up applying to RIT, and my second internship was in Medina, and then that became a staff job.
So we're going to skip forward to this year.
Sure.
You also won Best of Show. I mean, you took so many first place. What was it about this year that you just kicked ass?
Good adjectives to describe that body of work probably are tenacity, doggedness, a lot of luck, dedication to the community that I'm tasked with covering.
And you don't even have a newsroom to work out of.
I don't. I'm fully remote. I live in Akron, and I commute down to Tuscarawas County. It's about an hour. And when I'm there, I'm there. I'm devoted to it. I work out of cafes. I work out of my car. I work wherever I can plop down my laptop.
When did you lose your newsroom?
About a year and a half ago.
Did you ever think 5 years ago that it was possible, the possibility of even working remote? I mean, COVID has has changed the attitude of that, at least.
No, mainly because I can't foresee the future, but to some extent, a lot of us have seen the proverbial writing on the wall when it comes to the future of the news industry, and those of us who are immersed in it, we can anticipate some things coming. I've always been prepared to work from wherever I need to.
Well, you have your favorite coffee houses.
I do, yeah. The Daily Grind is my favorite office, for what it's worth, in New Philadelphia. Yeah, they are very accommodating. I'm always sure to buy something when I'm in there and working, and most people know me, and it's a good spot to chat with folks. It's a little loud, so it's challenging to maintain focus at times, for sure. When I need quiet, calm, serenity, or anything that you would normally have in a newsroom, sometimes it's a challenge to seek that out and find it. I find myself at Tuscora Park from time to time. From what I understand, that's where OMPA was actually founded back in 1951. I'll go to the library, I'll go and sit in my car, and yes, I can work from the car, I have a stand for my laptop. It's a very different way of working. I suppose it's kind of like this hybrid between being a wire photographer and a community journalist. It's an odd juxtaposition for sure. It's not what I expected, but I don't have really another choice, you know. We still have to continue on serving our communities.
You are the only photographer, and I think you said there's only one reporter left.
I am. There's one photographer, myself, and one writer.
That's crazy.
And I've taken up the writing and reporting duties, too. I have about 100 bylines, written bylines, in 3 years.
Yep. You're amazing.
And it's everything from breaking news to cops and courts to longer form features, general news. I've written 4 or 5 sports pieces. One in particular was focused on the importance of referees in high school sports, coming on the heels of COVID, when the attitude towards referees just got really bad. And I think we've all experienced it at multiple levels. So the OHSAA was really trying to stop that in some way, shape, or form. And I don't know how you can or if you do, but I felt like someone needed to speak up from within our community as journalists and write something about it. And then I looked back in my archives photographically, I'm like, I have a whole hell of a lot of pictures of referees that will suit this piece really well. And so I got an interview out of an OHSA official and did some research and cobbled together some data about the attrition rate of referees and the fall off in availability of football officials in particular. And so put together a nice piece, you know. I guess I've never been afraid of stepping up and just doing whatever needed to be done.
The Times reporter is really lucky to have you.
Well, thanks.
Jeremy, you are one of the few who have won large market POI and the clip contest for the year. So congratulations on that.
Well, thank you.
You have the opposite situation of Andrew. You actually have an office to work out of, and you have a pretty big staff compared to other newspapers of the size of the city of Toledo.
Yeah, we're very fortunate at The Blade to have as many photographers that we do. We still have a staff of 6 photographers, including myself, as well as a reporter who sort of has a hybrid position where he shoots his own photographs. We're still able to provide a lot of coverage, although, I mean, it's still down, way down from when I first started there. When I first started at The Blade, we had maybe 12 or 13 photographers at one point. We've been cut in half. We're still in a fortunate position.
So you've won the clip contest 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I'm a little surprised by it, but yes.
And you just became the chief photographer when Dave Zapatosky retired.
Yeah, he retired May 1st of last year. So okay. I'm almost a year into it now.
Are you Monday through Friday?
Generally speaking, although I do adjust my schedule to accommodate busy weekends and, you know, stuff like that.
What are some of the pictures that you entered for POY? What do you think is your strong suit? I know sports used to be your strong suit because you work nights.
Yeah, for years I worked nights. I would say I get to the end of the year and 80% of my work was sports, and I'd be searching for, you know, features and news and all the things that I wasn't shooting during the day. And now everything's kind of been turned up on its head, and I have a lot of portraits, a lot of features, a lot of illustrations, you know, food type stuff. And now I'm searching for sports pictures. So it's been kind of interesting. So, you know, as far as, you know, any particular picture, I don't think in an individual category, I don't know if it won anything individually or not, but I had a nice picture from the 4th of July, a watermelon eating contest of this little girl that I just thought was just really cute. It stood in my mind all year. And I knew I was going to enter it in something. And the interesting story behind that was the year prior I photographed the event, and I actually got a friend of hers that made it into the paper. And she decided that if she decorated herself up enough that she might get in the paper as well. And so she wrote Happy Fourth on her forehead during, and I saw her. That's it, right? Yeah, Andrew just pulled it up. And so I gravitated right towards her. And sure enough, Dad's standing there, I get her name and everything. And he's like, yeah, this is what she set out to do. And I'm like, well, mission accomplished, you know. You know that, and
you had the benefit of a little bit of fill light off of that white tablecloth as I examined the picture a little bit closely.
Yeah,
it was almost like a headshot where you got that classic fill light from underneath.
I wish I could say I lucked out. I planned it that way, but you know that's just the way it landed.
So we all shoot with different kinds of cameras. So I guess this is saying that it's not really the camera, but it's the person behind the camera. I know you shoot with, Jeremy, you shoot with Canon.
Yeah, yes.
But today you were awarded your first Sony because you won a Sony. A Sony rep was here today.
And I am very grateful and blown away by that. I'm anxious to see what it can do.
Andrew, you shoot with Fuji.
I do.
And Terry, you shoot with?
Sony. Yeah.
Sony. Okay. And we did have the Sony rep on the podcast today, so make sure you listen to her if you want to learn all about Sony and their program.
The gear certainly helps. It doesn't make the pictures. It's really important to make that distinction.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. What's your opinion on that?
For me personally, just in this culmination of the work that last year that took me to all these wins, was proactivity as a journalist, photojournalist, rather than being reactive towards the pictures and the moments. Almost a prevision for what it's worth, just seeing the picture, A, that you want, and being in the right space physically and the right mindset to make those good pictures. And I'm not making these pictures, I want to make this distinction too, I'm not making pictures with awards in mind. That's a horrible way to go about what we do. Just make good pictures, and if you end up with award winners, that's the icing on the cake. We're serving our communities first and foremost, no matter what level you're at. And so the gear can certainly aid in that. And for me, physically, as I've struggled with little things, Terry and I talked about this yesterday, having something as simple as the little reticulating or articulating screen on the back of contemporary mirrorless cameras now can really save your knees. That's a big thing. Or even with the proverbial Hail Mary shot, holding the camera above your head, As opposed to just doing it blind, we can now tilt that screen back and see what we're focusing upon. Little things like that are super helpful. Whereas, 5 or 10 years ago, it was a little bit different of a mode of working. And then having a mirrorless system very much lightens the load. And a couple weeks into using the mirrorless Fuji system myself, and I'm not pushing Fuji here, it was just a simple choice, I came back from a really long day of work, and upon getting home, my wife remarked to me, you don't carry yourself like you've been run over by a truck. I don't feel bad. I had this huge day, and I feel pretty darn good. It's because I'm not carrying ridiculously heavy gear that we're used to carrying around by virtue of being on DSLRs, which are just heavier. I suppose in a way it makes making the picture a little bit easier on us. Maybe that clears our minds a little bit. I'm not sure. The jury might still be out. Some of those technological advancements are certainly a boon. And if you really want to get down to the nuts and bolts of it, there's some aspects of mirrorless that allow us to make kind of different pictures. I mean, pushing shutter speeds to 18 or 25,000, with the electronic shutter, or just the higher ISOs. It changes things a bit.
I've been able to shoot commercial jobs at 12,800.
There you go.
Yeah.
And the clients were like, these are great. I can't even fathom that from the film days.
No.
I mean, 6,400 looked pretty much like dreck.
Right.
But we got an image for the newspaper. But if it was a commercial job, they would never have gone with it.
Fundamentally, though, it still goes back to the basic interactions that we have with the people that we cover.
Oh, absolutely.
Being there for them, being in the moment, not interjecting ourselves into the moments, allowing their stories to really come through in the photographs we make.
Well, I go back to what I, in college, a couple of lessons that stood out for me. Chuck Scott said back at OU, the best piece of equipment they have is their brain, the ability to think. And what Andrew was talking about, anticipating moments. And Marcy Nyswander, who is an instructor at OU, she's like, and I'll never forget this, the harder you work, the luckier you get. And just by sticking around, staying longer, getting there early, staying there longer, working the situation, not giving it up, you're going to get better pictures that way. And it doesn't really matter what camera you have. If you put the work in, you're going to get the images.
And those were the same words that Joe Costa preached at Ball State.
Yeah.
Terry, you could do some name dropping big time.
Oh.
Can you name drop a couple, just a couple names?
Andrew was doing the think tank, the Domke bag.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. You bought your first Domke bag.
When Jim Domke was making Domke bags, yeah.
I mean, that's history.
That's just because I'm old.
Terry, you're historical, man.
Yeah, you are.
I still carry a Domke bag.
So do I. I've got yeah. Half a dozen. My kids got one of mine that, doesn't want to give up.
Yeah, I won a bag in a raffle today, but I don't know what it was, but yeah.
Look at David Burnett's from time to time.
Oh, I know.
His
I
looks
love
like
that.
It's been through the frickin' ringer. I mean,
it has.
It has, yeah. And so has David.
So has David, exactly.
So my last question, and you you help me segue into it, is if you can give our listeners one tip that you've learned over the years, what would it be? Terry, I'm going to start with you.
Work harder than every other person in the business.
Mm.
There's only 1% of the photographers who are going to elevate to greatness. But as Joe Costa said, you may never get to be that 1%, but you can be the hardest working photographer in the business if you just keep working.
Be real with the people that you cover.
Do you have an example?
No, just to be your genuine self, especially now. It's just a seemingly more and more complicated world as every day passes.
So be kind.
Be kind. Be real.
Honest.
Be your true self. It speaks volumes, and people can tell.
Yeah, I agree with both what both guys said here. I add to that, like, especially for a young photographer, to realize that there really is no substitute for experience. Once you've been there and you've done it and you've seen things and then these situations reappear and you face them again, you're going to look at it a little bit differently. You know, when I started earlier in my career, I was always thinking, I got to get this particular picture, this particular thing. Everybody's over here. Everybody's doing this. And now I'm like, kind of walk away from that and try to find my own picture. And I don't get so worked up about that precise little thing here and there. And I found that it's just made me stronger as a photographer, and it only comes from experience. You know, you're not going to have that really at 15, 18, whatever, you know.
Well, that's the problem with these publishers and these hedge fund owners, and they're canning their photo departments, and they're giving cell phones to reporters who know nothing about visuals. And then you have word people in charge of the newspapers who don't take us seriously, don't give us decent equipment. Is there anything else anybody wants to say?
The genuineness about how we project ourselves as working professionals in the field, especially when we deal with the people who we photograph, is readable in the pictures that we end up publishing. Disingenuine people make for disingenuine photographs, and we can tell.
That's good.
We've all seen pictures that do a number on people, and it's hard to look at. Those images are hard to look at. We've all seen them, and they continue to get made, and it's unfortunate. And they come from some situations that are pretty tough.
Yeah, we could probably go for another couple hours talking about that. But
yeah.
Thank you, Terry Clark, for being our speaker today and giving us a wonderful demonstration of your equipment during the workshop.
Thank you.
And thank you, Andrew, Dolph, and Jeremy Wadsworth.
Thank you.
For being on the show. I really appreciate it. This is part one of the Buckeye Visualist Podcast, the 2024 ONPA Convention Edition. You also don't want to miss parts two and three. Part two features our two new ONPA officers, Kristen Bauer, the new treasurer, and Lisa Scalfaro, our secretary. They were just sworn in today. Congratulations, ladies. Part three highlights one of our sponsors, Sony. Amanda Eric, our very own Sony rep for the day, chats about all things Sony, from its large inventory of photographic equipment they offer, the programs available, and the support it gives. We appreciate your sponsor support, Amanda. I am your host, Lori King, and I hope to see you at next year's convention.
You've been listening to the Buckeye Visualist Podcast.